Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode number 53 of Full Draw Friday. This week, we're talking turkeys again. We got Nick Wilson on with us. He is an NWTF qualifying caller, and he's with the Talk About It Outdoors guys. So if you haven't checked their podcast out, make sure you go over and do that. They've got a great show. We've had Alex DeBoard on a few times now that runs that show with Nick. So that's who we got this week. We're going to talk specifically about calling. So if you guys missed last week, go back and check that one out. It's number 52. We talked with Rip Dickerson about actually specific calls and the different types of calls and what might be good for certain people and stuff like that. And now this week, we're going to actually get into the art of calling or calling in different situations and that kind of stuff. So I think it's going to be a really good episode for not only new turkey hunters, but also people who've been out here doing it for a while too. I think you can pick some stuff up if you listen to Nick talk. Like he said several times, whatever he says, you know, you don't necessarily take it to the bank, but it's what's worked for him, and he's been pretty successful over the years. So, I mean, I think you probably couldn't take it to the bank. I think you guys would get something out of it if you listen to what he's got to say. So I appreciate you tuning in, and let's get into it. Number 53. Okay, we got Nick Wilson from Talk About It Outdoors on with us this week to talk a little calling. If you guys missed it, go back and check out last week's. We talked with Rip Dickerson on last Full Draw Friday about turkey call specifically. So I figured we'd bring Nick on to talk about calling. And Nick, before we get started, why don't you just give everybody kind of your background? And you, I know you said you're new to the calling game, but I know you've been pretty successful already, so would you just give us a background on not only that, but also turkey hunting?
Yeah. My name's Nick Wilson. I'm part of the Talk About It Outdoors podcast crew. We got a YouTube channel called Chasing Weekends. And now I have a mouth call building company called Wilson Custom Calls. So started that. I guess we can go back to my turkey hunting career. I started turkey hunting when I was a kid with my dad. And he was kind of like, it was kind of a outlet for him to scout for deer. He was a bigger deer hunter than he was turkey hunter.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kind of took off with it. Once I always called as a kid, and then I took off with it and kind of ran with it. Like he would almost essentially hunt with me and I would call. So,
right.
I kind of kept going and always heard about calling competitions and never really took them serious until about, I guess this is my fourth year. 4 years ago, I went to one single competition
mm-hmm.
and called and absolutely bombed. I thought I was way better than I was.
Right.
Well, when you go to these things, you realize how good of callers they are out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back to this very same calling competition the very next year and bombed again. And from the very first time, I want to say this was in 2020,
mm-hmm.
I picked up a mouth call. And to this day, I don't think I've probably been, maybe I can probably count on one hand how many days in 4 years that I've not had a mouth call in my mouth. So
yeah.
I practice a lot.
Right. Sounds like it.
Yeah. So I went back last year and I started calling. I made it a goal that I was going to start traveling to every competition that I could possibly make it to.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one I went to, I got beat out in 100 division by a couple of kids that are really good callers and they're actually grand national champions. And then, man, it just kind of kept going for me. It started clicking and I won 100 division, and 100 division is kind of where most people start off. That's
mm-hmm.
when they're up in age past 16, 18 years old. And won it, and then I went down and won first place in a calling competition in Georgia, so that qualified me for NWTL. And I started traveling around and just started building calls like 2 years before that and started selling them. And mm-hmm. It's kind of clicked for me. I mean, I still got a lot of work to do, and now I've been doing the Goblin division, and it's been a lot of fun, man. I'll be honest with you. And if anybody's listening to this that hasn't done it or thinking about doing it, do it. Because yep. I promise you, it'll make you a better hunter and it'll make you a better caller.
That's awesome. Yeah, we've had a few guys on the show that have done that, been in that circuit, and they all kind of say similar things about it. And it seems like it's a pretty tight-knit group of guys that go around to these calling contests, and, you know, it's kind of a – you kind of get to know other guys that are good at it and learn tricks and tips from them, but you're competing at the same time. So it's kind of a cool thing, it sounds like.
It is. It's almost one of the only sports, I would say. And I play golf, and I grew up playing ball. Never was good at basketball, being a bigger guy. But it's like one of the only sports that I guess you'd call turkey calling a sport. But people are willing to help you.
Right.
And even though, again, you're against one another, when it comes time to get on stage, you want to beat your buddy, you know, and heckle him or whatever like that. But again, they're going to help you with stretches on your latex or your pot calls or your box calls, whatever you're trying to do. They're going to help you and lend you advice, because I guess maybe because it is like, it's not a huge sport. So we need numbers of people there, you know, to make it a competition. And, you know, and I guess when you got competition, it gives you something to go towards, you know. It gives you, you know, if I go out and play with a better golfer, it makes me want to compete.
Exactly.
Be a better golfer.
Gives you a reason to go practice. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Same way with shooting bows or anything like that. So you get around people that are good, it kind of makes you want to step your game up. And, you know, I would say Alex, my partner on the podcast, you know, he's kind of freshly got into it. And he said, I think this turkey calling is the only competition stuff where you get into it and the crowd makes no noise.
Right.
So it's a little hard to get past, but it will turn your calling. And again, the old saying is, you don't have to be a good turkey caller to kill a turkey.
Right.
I mean, Grandpappy did it with an old scratch box or something like that, you know? So, but it does better your woodsmanship, I think, and using situational calls that, like, when I started, I knew what a kiki was, but I didn't know how to do it.
You know?
I didn't know the difference between assembly yelp and a excited hen yelp and stuff like that. Just things that you learn that you don't listen to when you're in the spring woods. We don't have a fall season down here, so I don't fall hunt, but you don't pay attention to that stuff in the spring woods. And it really brings a lot to, like, listening to vocabulary while you're turkey hunting.
Yeah. So let's dive into that then a little bit, because, like I said, I want to get into the actual calling when you're out there hunting for guys that are going to be hunting. And let's start with the basics, I guess, like maybe a guy that's only been hunting a year or two, or maybe he's just starting out and he's picked up a call, whether it's a box call or a pot call or a mouth call, anyone. What's like the first thing you should learn as a turkey hunter if you want to have a chance at success in the woods?
Oh man, that's easy. That's patience.
Yeah.
You can leave the calls in your truck.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You could go sit down next to an oak tree and try to get as tight to that turkey as you want to, and just scratching the leaves.
Right.
You could have just as good a success there, and you got to have those patience. And don't get me wrong. I'm the world's worst. You can ask all my friends. My patience is very, but for some reason in the turkey woods, the older I've gotten, the better it is.
Right.
And I think it's just when you get your butt whooped enough, you'll eventually learn.
Right. Right.
But I would say as a call standpoint, you know, first off, I would say probably start off with, unless you have a God-given talent to blow a mouth call, I would probably start off with a box and a pot call. And when I say a pot call, I would stick more slate. It's more forgiving than a glass call.
Okay.
That's just my personal opinion. I would get a slate call and get you a good wood. I would get at least two strikers with it. Because each striker is going to make a different sound.
Right.
And get you a good forgiving box call, and just practice with them. Just practice on soft, subtle stuff. Just practice very quiet, because a turkey has a way better ear than you or I have. That's what I would focus on more than anything outside of patience. Working on soft calling. Soft calling is going to kill a lot more turkeys.
If you guys are looking for your own piece of ground to manage and hunt, Rodney Hawkins is a guy you need to talk to. He grew up hunting and fishing in Southern Illinois, and he's now putting that love for the outdoors into selling recreational properties as a land specialist with Midwest Farm and Land. Midwest Farm and Land isn't your average real estate company. They do residential properties, but they also do a ton of recreational property sales as well. Rodney himself sold over $7 million worth of properties last year alone. They've got agents like him all over Illinois, so they're really a local company with a national reach. For more info on them, what might be available, or even getting your property listed if you're looking to get rid of one and maybe get into something else, you can contact Rodney directly at 618-925-3153, and he'll get you taken care of. He's also got his own company called RG Outdoors that currently has products from Radix Hunting, Tacticam Trail Cameras, Camo Dust, and he's adding new stuff all the time. So if you're interested in any of that, go over to their Facebook page, RG Outdoors, email them at rgoutdoors@yahoo.com, or again, just call Rodney directly at 618-925-3153. So I guess you can hide your mistakes a little bit more too if you're calling soft.
You can. And then it gives that bird more of a curiosity, you know.
They're
birds are very curious. So if you make him, you know, you make him think about where you're at instead of giving your exact location. And, you know, if you only learn to practice that thing at one volume and that bird's hung up at 80 yards and you give him that, you know, you're sitting on the front porch or in your basement, wherever you may be practicing your call,
mm-hmm.
and you do that real loud, he's going to know. He can just stick his head up over a log.
Right.
Say, there ain't nothing over there. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, he don't see what he come for. So, patience and very, very soft and subtle calling.
Yeah, that makes sense. So as someone who's learning too, what's a good way to figure out the sound that you're trying to make? I mean, is it just getting out there in the woods and hunting and listening to the turkeys? Is it like, can a guy look up on YouTube what a turkey sounds like and try to emulate that to get started? What would you recommend for that part of it?
Yeah, 100% what you just said, YouTube. Mm-hmm. And most guys, even like if people were to get in the calling industry, you're going to hear people say this over and over and over. It's on repeat. Listen to real turkeys. Don't try to imitate somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't pull up a website or a YouTube of Matt Van Sise, Dave Owens, or any of these guys and try to mimic those guys, because you're not going to create that same sound. You're going to find your own hen out there. So just find hens and listen to them, you know, find just regular clucks and purrs and, soft tree talk, and mix that in with patience. And as long as you got turkeys, you got to have turkeys one to kill them. But after that, you mix those in and you'll have a deadly combination.
Yeah, for sure. So we'll dive a little bit deeper here. Let's talk a little bit of situational calling, because you hit on it a little bit there when you were talking about, like, if that bird's hung up at 80 yards just over the hill or something, you're calling real loud, he pokes his head up over it and he doesn't see anything, like, he's got no reason to come over there. So let's start out with, like, you're first getting there in the morning and you don't hear anything gobble on the roost when you first get there, but you think you know, maybe you put them to bed the night before, you think you know about where they should be roosting. And you go in there, are you waiting for, like, a certain time to call? Are you waiting for that turkey to gobble? Like, if he doesn't make any noise, are you doing anything to try to rile him up? And is that where, like, your locator calls come in? How much you use those or anything? But what would you do in that scenario? Like, you just show up, you think you know where they're at, but you're not hearing anything.
Yeah. I'll tell you how I hunt, it's not the Bible, so you guys will take it word for, you know,
right.
Go experience for yourself, you know. And I used to be, if I went out there and I knew I had birds on the property, I would natural voice owl hoot, and mm-hmm. I was always doing that. Now I hardly ever natural voice. I'm one of these guys that just let the woods wake up. If I know there's turkeys there, I'll find that high ridge, mm-hmm. the highest point I can find, and I'll find me a good tree or a good blowdown or something like that, and I'll just sit there and listen. If I know he's in the area,
right.
And more times than not, I mean, unless he's just sitting there in the tree and he's got a passel of hens that he's looking at, he doesn't have to gobble, but
mm-hmm.
don't focus so much on the gobble, you know, especially if you're overrun with a lot of turkeys, listen to those hens too, because
mm-hmm.
a lot of times this spring season, you're going to be hunting. He don't have to gobble. He could be looking at them. They all pitch down together. And then start hunting the hens and call them up. You get them to come your way. You know, he may be falling close behind.
Right.
But to go back to further in depth on that, if I do know a bird's in the area, I would definitely give out some soft tree talk. I would start off real soft. I wouldn't blow the woods down right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
I'd give some, especially if he started gobbling, you know, right at first light.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the kind of guy, I like to call to them on a limb, let them know I'm there.
Mm-hmm.
Let the hens know I'm there. I give them a little soft tree talk. If he cuts me off immediately, I'll give him a little bit more, maybe a little light yelp. And then if he cuts me off by the third gobble, he's cut me off, I go quiet on him.
Yeah.
And then I let his wheels start spinning.
Mm-hmm.
I put the ball in his court to see what he's going to do. So,
right.
I hope that answers good for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're talking there, when he's cutting you off, he's essentially what you're saying is you're starting to call and then bam, he fires off. Like as you're starting to call.
Yeah, if I can tell that he's still in the limb and he's facing me, and you know, that's something I think you just learn with experience as well, is what way that turkey's facing you.
Mm-hmm.
If that turkey's facing you, gobbling at you, you can tell a big difference, especially here in the mountains of North Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
You could tell these turkeys will look at you, or they'll turn on a limb and look away. Maybe he's not paying attention to you. Maybe he's just gobbling at a crow or an owl on the other ridge or something like that. But if he spins on that limb after gobbling and you gave him some tree talk and you got his attention, like mm-hmm. he's already processed that. So you can probably let off of him, and he's probably going to either do one or two things. He's going to fly down with hens, mm-hmm. or he's going to fly down. He's going to walk right to you as soon as he hits the ground.
Right.
If you go quiet on him. And right. that's just how I hunt. And I'm not telling everybody that's the right way to do it, but get out there and experience. If you want to get out there and blow your hooter that you just purchased, hey, rip it down, you know,
mm-hmm.
because if you're turkey hunting, you like to hear turkeys gobble. So I get
it. Right.
But me, I just like the woods to wake up. Yeah. And
that goes
like
back
to
that
like to,
patience thing too. You're talking about.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
I didn't mean to cut you off there. Sorry. But, you're talking too about like if he's facing you or not. The first bird I killed, that almost got us in trouble, because when we first heard him, it sounded like he was all the way on the other side of the timber, and it was getting close to light. We were late getting in, so we were kind of moving. Well, then the next one, like he turned and was facing us, and he couldn't have been more than 50, 60 yards away. Of course, we just froze and tried to get set up on the edge of the field. Ended up killing him. But that's something too where I learned, like, just because it sounds like they're one place, maybe give it a second if you're trying to move on them, because you may end up getting too close if he was just happened to be facing the other direction. And that's the same, like, this is just down in the bottoms where we were at. I know you're talking like in the mountains. I'm sure it's even more amplified, but even just down in there, they can sound like they're a long ways from where they actually are, depending on where they're facing when they do gobble.
I would agree with that. And Cody, the other guy that does the podcast with us, his son's actually leaving for Florida in the morning,
mm-hmm.
and he's never hunted down there. And I said, if I have one tip from Alex and I ventured down there last year, I said, if I had one tip to leave you for Florida, it's so flat. I was like, don't let those birds fool you. If they sound like they're a long ways, they're not.
Right.
They're a lot closer than you. They're a lot closer than you think, because they don't have nothing to echo their sound off of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
So, yeah.
So now let's go. He flies down. Let's just go with that scenario. He flies down. You were quiet. He flies down. Like, you hear him pitch down, and then it's just nothing. And you've sat there for, I don't know, a length of time, and he's not showing up. What are you doing at that point? Are you going back to calling at him a little bit, or are you still just hanging in there and waiting for him to show up?
So here's I'm going to break this down two ways.
Mm-hmm.
If he's on the limb and I call to him and he answers, And again, I'm going to try to at least get him to gobble at least three times with some soft talk.
Okay.
If he gobbles roughly three times, I shut up, mm-hmm. and I just go completely quiet. I get ready, and my head's on a swivel, because more likely he's going to show up and he's going to be looking.
Mm-hmm.
He may not gobble again unless he's just really fired up. If he flies down and I hear, maybe I'm listening to some other tree talk from some hens,
mm-hmm.
and he flies down and goes completely quiet. It depends. If he flies down and go completely quiet, honestly, and I know he's in that area, I'll probably, and this is where patient comes in, mm-hmm. and a lot of people ain't going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to sit there until he quits breeding those hens. If I can find a way to get in front of where those hens are wanting to take him.
Right.
So that would be my two. I would either try to get around in front of him,
mm-hmm.
whether it's drop off in a creek bed and walk down the creek bed to try to get up in front of where they're going. If I have to walk over two mountains to get over on a roadbed to get in front of him, I'll do that. But if not, I might wait till 10 o'clock for them hens and maybe to go lay,
mm-hmm.
and he's going to get fired back up.
Right.
To me, turkey hunting is the best turkey hunting is between, I'll give a big range here, 9 a.m. to 12 p.m.
Okay.
That's one of my favorite times. So if it goes quiet in the mornings, I just sit back and wait, man. I just watch the birds and watch the sun and
mm-hmm.
and just enjoy it.
At that point, you're just waiting for him to get done doing what he's doing for that early in the morning off the roost, and then he's looking for another one.
Yeah, and you never know. You may have a satellite bird gobble off in the distance. You're like, you know, then you're kind of taking inventory of what you need to do. And by this time, if you do put out a couple of calls, I've had satellite birds walk in behind me, you know, and then you're like caught off guard because you didn't. One, you either heard him a long time ago, first thing in the morning, and he somehow heard you call, and now he's came all the way over there. So, yeah, that's kind of how my strategy is. Again, my strategy. We're very few in numbers here in Georgia, where we used to be when I was younger.
We're the same way.
I have to be more patient with the way I hunt these birds.
The off season is upon us, and we all know that the path to success next season starts now. To consistently harvest mature bucks, you need to make the most of the upcoming months. And to do that, you need a solid plan. That's where we can help. If you guys want to improve your property to reach its full potential for wildlife, reach out to us about a consultation. We'll spend time getting to know your property and your goals for your deer herd and use that knowledge to develop a wildlife management plan that will help make the most out of the ground that you have. You can contact us through our website or social media to get started today. Yeah, it seems like it's that way here too, because you might get on a bird, and if you screw that one up, you might not be able to find another one, you know, especially that day. I mean, potentially maybe come back and get on him the next day or something, but they're not near what they were 15 years ago around here, even when you could find several birds in the same morning, you know.
That's right.
And hunt different birds. But yeah, that's that patience thing. We keep coming back to that. But especially now, if you're in an area with fewer birds, I think it's even emphasized.
That's right. That's so, right. And go ahead. I think people are going to make mistakes. You know, I make mistakes daily.
Oh, yeah.
And especially turkey hunting. And you just got to learn from those. And you know, if it's eating you up, or you got a cramped leg, or you just can't stand it, you got to get to a birthday party and you only got one day to hunt. I'm not saying sit there and wait on that bird. Go make a move. If you mess it up again,
you know,
you may booger him up. You may take a day or two for him to come back in, but, you know, I'm not saying do everything Nick says, but get aggressive on him if you got to. You maybe only get one day a weekend to hunt because the wife lets you out, you know? So, don't take everything I say to the bank, but I mean, that's just some things that I've learned along the way. So
yeah, for sure. So that just an example of that too. Even last year, the first morning me and Nate went and we screwed one up. I mean, we heard him on the roost late, and he pitched down with some hens, and we were just a little bit too far over the break on the field that still had standing corn or cut corn in it. The stalks were still there; they hadn't worked it yet, and he didn't see the decoy. And then they went over another roll, and I mean, we waited maybe an hour. And we just got antsy and got up, and we're going to go back to where he came from. Well, he ended up still being there with his hens, and he picked us off, and we messed them all up. And I went back a couple days later. That bird was never back. The bird I ended up killing, I went in on a morning. Actually, I went to another spot and drove by this one, and he was out strutting in a field with some hens right along a levee by the river. So I got down on the river side of the levee and worked all the way down to him. And got up to him, and he was about 50 yards. And this was day before last day of my season. So I shot and missed him. And that very next morning, I came back, and that bird was there again with hens, and I killed him the next morning. So, and that's, you know, that's even something that's different bird to bird. But like you're saying, there's times where you can get aggressive and get away with it. There's times where it's not going to work. But if you're in that situation, I mean, by all means, right? That's why a lot of guys like turkey hunting, I think.
That's right. Exactly right. If you don't mind, let me back up one thing here real quick that kind of came to me. But talking about birds flying down, and maybe they're with a flock of hens. And I didn't say this, but sometimes if that boss hen, if she starts getting annoyed, or she heard me calling, and a lot of times she'll start getting aggressive, and I'm sure you've heard this, she'll start getting loud. And usually when she does that, especially if I'm set up above her or she has to come look for me, or if I'm set up in good cover, a lot of times I will get back aggressive with her. And, you know, kind of like the boss gobbler in the area, she's the boss hen. So she'll come and investigate. And a lot of times if she's doing that, she may pull him in to you by following. So sometimes I do get aggressive like that if the hens are willing to get aggressive.
I always compare things to deer hunting because I am a deer hunter first and foremost, but it's almost like when you've got that buck in the rut, like middle of November, he is worried about what the doe's doing. The doe's still worried about doing her thing, and you can take advantage of manipulating the doe And wherever she's going to go, that buck's probably going to follow. Same way with the hens and the tom, right? Like,
yes.
If that's the hens that he was hearing on the roost and he sees them pitch down, and you can manipulate that hen and get her to come to you, like you're saying, then he's, I mean, good chance he's going to be following her, right?
That's right. That's right. That's right. Now, the problem with that is, if she comes up there with all her girlfriends,
mm-hmm.
you're going to have to be super still.
A lot of eyeballs.
There are going to be a lot of eyeballs looking at you, and he's going to be, you know, several 10, 15 yards behind them.
Right.
So you're going to have to buy your time and wait if you're willing to do that. So mm-hmm. just some things to consider.
Yeah, for sure. That's something that I don't hear a lot, though. And again, I'm pretty new at this, but even just listening to a lot of guys trying to get better at it, you don't hear a lot of people talk about calling, at least the ones that I've heard, calling to the hens. I mean, I've heard a couple guys talk about it, but kind of a lot of the focus is on that tom because that's the one you're trying to kill. But like you're saying, kind of read what they're doing. Maybe you hear them and you don't hear him gobbling, and you can, I mean, work against them or work with them, I guess, in different ways.
That's right. That's right. And it all depends on, I guess, can I come back tomorrow morning and hunt? Maybe I got to run at 9, you know, I don't want to get mm-hmm. too aggressive and try to do this. You know, it just depends on your area. Am I hunting 5 acres? Or am I hunting 5,000 acres? You know,
right. Yep.
Do I got to call him off the neighbor's property because this guy's coming in next week to hunt for a week? There's a good chance he kill. You know, all mm-hmm. that stuff plays into factor. I think you need to have all that game plan before you even set foot out there.
Yeah, for sure. And let's go to another scenario now. So let's say it's that mid-morning time you're talking about, and you got one that's come off of his hens, and you're calling to him, he's responding, and then he's that bird that gets hung up, and he just, you can't seem to make up that last 50, 60 yards, whatever you need him to come. What are you doing to that bird? Hey, everybody, I appreciate you tuning in for another episode. If you don't already, go over to Instagram and Facebook and give us a follow at Ridge Hunter Outdoors. We also have a private Facebook group called Ridge Hunter Nation where you guys can have some input on the show. You can ask us questions. You can ask upcoming guests questions. You can tell us who you want us to have on and what you want us to talk about. And on top of all that, just use it as a regular hunting group. Share your stories, your success, pictures, your failures, whatever it is. That's all at Ridge Hunter Nation on Facebook. Our website is RidgeHunterOutdoors.com. That's where you're going to find more info on the consulting and management services that we provide. We also have the podcast posted on the website with some other content as well. And we have our merchandise and our food plot seed. And if you find any of that stuff that you want, make sure you use the discount code RHOPOD. That's all caps, no space. And you get 10% off your entire order there. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or anywhere else that lets you do so, make sure you rate and review. That helps us, and give us a follow there too. YouTube, our channel is Ridge Hunter Outdoors. You can subscribe to that, hit the notification bell so you know when everything comes out. The podcast will be posted there, as is our Fall Pursuit show, which we'll have more of coming up next season. You guys can go back and rewatch everything that we did this year. We had 10 episodes on that. We're hopefully going to do some turkey hunting this spring, and of course, we'll have all our off-season content on YouTube as well. So thanks to everybody who already does follow and subscribe. If you don't, make sure you go do that. Now let's get back to the episode.
Oh, man. Most of the time, I would say, I'm not going to say every time, but if he's hung up like that, or let me back up. If you get him fired up midday like that a lot of times, and he's already worked, let's say he's 500 yards and he's already closed the distance to 250,
mm-hmm.
he's going to come that other 250. He's already committed.
Right, right.
And if he, I feel like if a bird like that, more times than not, if they hang up into one spot, it's either a strut zone he feels comfortable in, maybe a roadbed, something like that. Mm-hmm. But he's eventually, if he's already made that mark, he's going to come. If he's answered you at some point during the day, if you've got the patience, he's going to show up to that spot you called at.
Mm-hmm.
So basically at that time, I would probably, knowing that I had the higher ground on him,
mm-hmm.
I would probably just sit there and be quiet. And this has worked in the past for me is I would limit myself to, and my friends can't stand it when I do it, but if I've had birds like that, and I'd sit there for an hour and not call.
Right.
And, if a bird's doing something like that, one, the bird feels comfortable in the spot he's in, or two, somebody's already boogered him.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's been shot at, but he's still looking for love. Maybe he saw something that he couldn't have, you know, maybe he saw some guys stand up out of a blind or, mm-hmm. you know, at the wrong time. But you know, you got to be careful too, because those birds like that, they go quiet on you, and he is breaking the distance. There's a good chance that he could come in behind you too. So,
right.
I'm a type of guy, like, I might get aggressive with him depending on how much he's been hunted. But if I go to a place that's pressured on public ground, I'm probably going to sit there and wait and see what he does.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope that answer is that good, because that's kind of a tough one, you know, because I mean, most people, especially I believe new beginners are probably just going to, you know, call as loud as they can.
Just hammer
him. Going. And there's nothing wrong with that, you know? I mean,
right.
But you're just educating that bird more and more.
Yeah, so. And like you're saying, if he is a pressured bird already, it's, you know, we do the same thing with ducks a lot of times. If we're hunting public ground for ducks and, you know, it's later in the season and we haven't had any new fly down in a while, like,
yeah,
a lot of times we won't call at all to them. So, I mean, it makes sense that it would be similar if he's been called at and called at and called at and then shot at and missed. Like, if you're just hammering him with a call, he's probably going to be a little bit leery of coming in.
Yeah, that's right. And if he does get to a certain point, let's say he breaks the distance and you don't feel like he's doing anything, and he goes quiet on you, if he gets to a certain point and say he's hung up for 30, 45 minutes and he gobbles, I would say he's either going to do one or two things. He's either going to gobble, 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 gobble. Hmm. He's going to hush and come your way, or he's going to turn around and he's going to gobble and go back to where he came from. And if he did that at that time, I'm going to make the fastest run I can to get where he was just at.
Right, to get ahead
and
of him.
I'm going to go to where he was just.
Oh, I mean, yeah. Okay, I got you. Yeah, I got
when
you.
When I get to where he's hung up at, I'm going to cut real loud, and hopefully he spins that, or I'm going to gobble at him. Right. I used to have one of those gobble tubes. I've been practicing some in my mouth, but I would vocally go down there and gobble at him just to be like, hey, another gobbler showed up in here. A lot of times I'll spin right back around, man, and walk back up there.
So, right, because like you're saying, if that's a place he felt safe, then he's probably willing to come back there versus
that's right.
coming to where you just were. That makes sense.
Yep.
So let's kind of wrap this thing up, because I totally forgot to tell you this before we got started, but this go up on Friday. We usually keep them
okay.
a little bit shorter, but I want to go over with you, like, the mistakes you see most guys make when it comes to calling. Like, obviously, we've hit on patience a ton, and, like, not being mm-hmm. patient is probably number one mistake that just hunters make in general, like, across the board, no matter what you're hunting. But, like, specifically when it comes to calling, what's the number one mistake you think is probably being made out there? And this is not you saying that, like, other guys suck at calling or whatever. It's just,
right.
like, what do you think is something that a lot of people miss or do wrong or maybe don't do?
I would say maybe overcalling.
Mm-hmm.
Overcalling when they shouldn't have to. Sometimes I think, you know, the old saying, less is more.
Right.
I think a lot of the times is at a young age, and some people love it. And if you're a good caller and you can call into the gun barrel, then do it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're, and again, bad calling can kill a turkey. It doesn't take that. But if you're just constantly ripping just to hear him gobble,
mm-hmm.
and that's all you're set out there to do, then so be it. But I think I would say just over calling too much,
mm-hmm.
knowing when to stop, you know.
That was definitely me the first times that I went, for sure. I feel like I probably called way too much just trying to get the bird to talk to me, and I probably screwed a lot of things up that first year I was trying to do it. But that would have been my guess, too, just from my experience and hearing other guys talk about it, is that probably overcalling would be a big one. Because it is, like you're saying, you get out there to turkey hunt, you want to hear them, and you see all these guys on TV calling them in and stuff, and you might not realize that, you may not pay attention to what they're actually doing. And like you said, if you're just out there to hear a turkey gobble and you don't really care about killing them, then fine. But if you want to kill the bird at the end of the day, it's maybe better, like you said, less is more a lot of times.
That's right. And again, and I go back to this, I probably said it three or four times now. I don't know everything about turkey hunting. I want people to go out and experience it for themselves,
mm-hmm.
and have a good time and learn their own lessons. That way they can bring something back. So what I say, don't take it to the bank, but this is just things that I've experienced. And, you know, we all know the best experience is getting out there doing it.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. You got anything else that you want to hit anybody with, some more knowledge you want to hit them with before we get off of here?
Man, and again, I'll go back to the very beginning of this conversation. If, you know, I'm pretty sure, I don't know if Illinois does, because I never see one on the NWTF website, but if you're thinking about getting in these calling competitions, you know, look in your local, go to NWTS website, go to the event page, scroll down to calling, and they don't keep them all up to date, but every so often, go to these competitions. If you have any questions, I'm telling you, you'll meet some of the best people in the industry. It'll open doors for you that, you know, that you'll, it'll just turn you into a much better hunter if that's the avenue you want to get on. So, get out there and practice, because I'm telling you, there's so much to learn in this game, and it's such a fun sport with a short amount of time. I wish we had longer to do it, but I believe if we did, we'd probably kill all the birds. But I would say, yeah, for anybody wanting to do it, to get serious about it, go to your local competitions, enter some. It's fairly inexpensive. It's a good way to bypass a Saturday when you're not doing nothing, and come to NWTF and hang out with some like-minded people as well. And yeah, for everybody else listening, like you said at the beginning, we got the podcast Talk About Outdoors. We got our YouTube Checks and Weekends, and I got Wilson Custom Mouth Calls that we all sell on our Talk About It Outdoors website. So if you guys need some diaphragms, holler at me.
There you go. We'll link that stuff in the description of this episode for everybody too. So this was your first time on. We'll have to bring you back on for a Monday episode so we can talk a little longer, and we'll get into more of your background and stuff. Because usually what we like to do with our first-time guests is kind of take them all the way back to where they got started. But yeah, we'll save that for a Monday episode. We'll definitely have you back on. I appreciate you making the time tonight. Come on, talk a little turkey calling. This is fun for, hopefully for the people listening, but for me too, being a fairly new turkey hunter, like talking to you guys. And I'm thankful for Alex hooking us up so we could do this. But I'm learning a lot just doing this series. So it's been a lot of fun. I appreciate you coming on and talking with me for the evening.
Absolutely, man. I've enjoyed it. Thanks to Alex as well for getting this set up. He had nothing but good things to say about you and your guys, and I've listened to several of your episodes, and keep doing what y'all are doing, man. If y'all ever need me, like I told you at the beginning of this thing, I was be honest with you, I was nervous about doing it. I mean, we've had over 315 episodes on our podcast, I think, and
right,
I've never done one with anyone. So again, thank you for allowing me to do this, and I'm sorry you had to get Rip Dickerson on here before me.
Yeah, well, yeah, you probably shouldn't be sorry for that, but no, man, I appreciate it. We'll definitely have you back on sometime, man.
Thanks, sir.
Yep.